Today's study finds us in Revelation, the 13th chapter. And we left off with verse 11. And so, let's see. Sister Connie, could you read for us Revelation 13, verse 11 through 14, please?
And I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and it had two horns like unto a lamb, and it spake as a dragon, and it exerciseth all the authority of the first beast in its sight, and it maketh the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast, of which the death stroke was healed. And it doeth great signs, that it should even make fire to come down out of heaven upon the earth in the sight of men. And it deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by reason of the signs which it was given to do to in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast who hath the stroke of the sword and lived.
All right, Sister Connie, who is this two-horned beast? What do we identify it as? What system?
It's the would that be the Protestant, the image of the beast?
Not the image of the beast. It's a tool.
In Ireland.
There we go.
I was trying to think of.
Okay. No, that's good. Very good. And so, Sister Connie, do you remember who started that Church of England?
Henry VIII.
And why did he do that?
Well, he was trying to get a divorce, and the Catholic Church would not grant him the divorce, so he just broke off and had a church of his own. So,
okay. Was he the head of the church as well as head of the country, as it were?
Yes, just as we see it today.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. Thank you, Brother Chris.
Yes, I think Cindy mentioned before the meeting started that, you know, Charles being coronated yesterday brought out that, yes, the king is still the head of the church in England. And I just made a note, we never hear about Ireland anymore as being that other horn. And I had it noted that in 1871, Ireland did return to the papacy. So they broke away from the Church of England. Over.
Yes, very good. We appreciate that. Very good. So on our, you know, when I say a timeline, this is very rough and rudimentary, but about 1200, England came under, as it were, the papal influence, about 1200. And in 1531, Henry VIII is brought out, broke off and developed the Church of England, of which he was the head. And the two horns, England and Ireland. Ireland was part of this Church of England arrangement in 1538. And as Brother Chris just mentioned, it ended in 1871. And it is kind of peculiar. But the length of time is 333 years, which I have to laugh. That's half of 666. But nonetheless, the brethren depict that two-horned beast since 1881 as a horn and a broken horn, because it's true. Ireland went back to papacy, just as Brother Chris was bringing out. And that's where you have Northern Ireland as being the Protestant, loyal to England, as it were, versus the majority of Ireland loyal to the papacy. So that's just, you know, without going into all that history, that does help understand that situation a little bit better. And so and just for the timeline a little bit, one last one is we talked about the image of the beast, which we're still going to get to Lord willing. But that was in 1846, as we discussed. So you kind of see your numbers from 1200 to 1846, this little bit of development, but the Church of England in 1531. Okay, good. Very good. So then the two horns like the lamb, it's interesting that the two, we know that the horns are powers. The first beast had 10 horns or 10 powers. And a lamb is a very gentle animal. That's the depiction of Jesus as the Lamb of God. He was willingly led to the sacrifice. He didn't resist. The horns are not really powerful. The horns of a lamb. If it said the horns of a ram, that would be different. So the horns are lamb-like, and he spake as a dragon. I think we can understand that he spake as a dragon because the head of the Church of England was first and foremost the king, the chief civil power of that two-horned area. That was the King Henry, and it's still the king, as the comments have brought out, even with Charles to this day. So the beast is a church-state government. That's our consistent interpretation in Revelation. And with the papacy, the ten-horned beast, the Pope he's both a civil and religious ruler, but he's more often, the religious element takes more precedent. You remember, that's why the horns, you remember that in Revelation 13:1, that's why the crowns were on the horns and not on the heads, because the Pope was primarily a religious leader with civil authority, but he relied on the civil powers symbolized in the horns. But with the Church of England, this two-horned beast, it says it spake as a dragon because King Henry was not a deep theologian. He wasn't speaking as the Pope, but he spake as a dragon, as a civil authority who was the head of the Church. And the lamb-like horns are of interest to us because this two-horned beast was not as powerful as the ten-horned beast. So that the Church of England and Ireland, when it first developed, was not nearly as powerful as the continent ten-horned beast, which included all of Europe. And if you look historically, it's not hard to find, England became Great Britain and rose to its world prominence in the 1700s, primarily with its naval abilities and its blossoming colonial trades. So that in the 1800s, it continued to blossom so that it was, as they said, finally toward the close of the 1800s, the sun never set on the British Empire because it was worldwide. It was in India with the East India Trade Company under British control all the way, you know, around the world, wherever the sun was, there was some part of the empire it was shining on. But it peculiarly, it used its military to enforce actually its commercial power. That was England's worldwide dominance, was in its commercial powers. And it used its military to enhance that, but it didn't go around conquering necessarily like armies of old, but rather it used primarily its commercial prowess, its colonies, and it developed it rose to a power in the 1700s and 1800s, as we said, and then it diminished. As the United States came on the scene and became more powerful, Great Britain started to decline. The pound was not the currency of favor. The U.S. dollar became the currency of favor. It became known as the petrodollar, had roots with the basis of oil and various things that we don't need to spend time on, but It's easy to think of this two-horned beast when we think of it as England and Ireland. We think of England as being more powerful, but we have to look back to the historical position of England when the Church of England came into existence and shortly thereafter. The real power was in France, Spain, Italy, and the continent. And as we know, like Spain in the 1600s, it was their conquistadors and others who were the ones who were expanding their colonies and bringing great wealth back from the New World and such. England caught up and surpassed them, defeated them. But nonetheless, that wasn't here at the beginning. So that's why we think our verse 11, it's when I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, out of already an organized Christian religious society, and that he had two horns like a lamb. England wasn't that powerful at the point in time. Spake as a dragon. Yes, the head of the church was primarily and first the head of the country. So we think that helps develop our symbolism of verse 11. Sister Debbie.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, when you said it came up out of the land, organized society, yeah. I was also thinking that maybe, well, it didn't come out of heaven and it didn't come out of the sea, that it got its authority from the social, makeup rather than it didn't get authority from God and it didn't, you know what I'm saying? That the land, earth, shows the authority was from a social level over. Well,
none of these beasts got their authority from God or true heaven. That's what we can concur with that for sure. But we're depicting the earth as a stable society versus the sea class as unstable. And so anyway, just trying to keep our interpretations consistent. Sister Ellis.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious. I would say most of the time Brother Russell refers to it as the two horns, England and Ireland. But there is one case where he said England and Germany. And I'm not sure why he uses Germany.
Is that in the Harvest Gleaning reference, Sister Alice?
No, it's reprint 63.
63. No.
You can find it. I mean, I came across it in the Common Bible. 63, okay. Verse 5. It's questions and answers.
Yeah.
Well, I just didn't know why Germany.
I don't either.
Is that Luther or?
Why don't you go ahead and read the context of that extremely early reprint and see if you can make heads or tails of it. But I usually go with his later thinking, like we read in the fourth volume forward last week, than to try to struggle doing a passing comment that doesn't jive. What we read in the 1912 forward last week is where I put it. So, Sister Debbie.
Well, just that, I don't know if it applies at all, but I know that most of the kings of England, their lineage is tied to Germany. The intermarriage with Germany. In fact, the recent queen, the king now, Charles, they're all descended from Germany. So I wonder if maybe that's what it was about. Over.
All right, thank you. In our verse 12, and he exercised all the power of the first beast before him. So the Church of England was exercising similar power that the papacy had, which was before him. And in that power, we're getting this further, and cause the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. So let's think about that for a moment. is how did the Church of England, by creating its own church government, how does that cause the people of society, a religious society, to worship the papacy? What does that mean? Sister Molly.
I'm not exactly sure because I was wondering this myself, but I'm thinking just now that perhaps it's, in a way, coercing the people to, or convincing them that this is a good way to lead people, that it's a proper, or whatever, a fitting method of rulership, and they can point to the previous. Over.
Very good. It's a confirmation that the first beast had it right. They should rule over the people and be their government. Ruth.
I was thinking of that phrase that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, that they showed that they wanted to be just like them. So, you know, everyone else thought that was a good idea. So, over.
Well, it's very fitting. That's those are great comments because it's just demonstrating he broke away from the papacy. So he wasn't encouraging people to go back to the papacy per se, but by example, he was demonstrating that as he made his church state acceptable to his people, that was a confirmation that what the papacy had done over their people was legitimate. The divine right of kings to rule and to make declarations on religious matters. It was a confirmation. He was successful. So that's a big part of that. So let's make another connection. Let's finish the symbols in verse 12. They worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. Now I want to ask you a question. It's not a trick question. How many times is it mentioned about this first beast wound in this chapter? How many times is this mentioned about the first beast being wounded and healed or wounded in this very 13th chapter? How many times? Brother Dan.
I'm going to get it wrong, Brother Rick, but the suspense was killing me. Verse 3, in this verse, and I also see it in verse 14, so, and 12 also, Connie points out. So there's, that's the verse we're considering. So 3 anyway.
That's the verses I had. Those three verses. If someone comes up with another one, that'll be great. But I found these three. So the Lord, again, is showing some kind of an emphasis here. And guess what? Each of these three verses gives us a little speck of insight more. So let's just take a second and look at these three. So if we look back at Revelation 13, verse 3, I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. So we find that it's a head wound. We find that it was should have been a death wound, but it wasn't. It was healed. And we read that because it was healed, the world was marveled that it was able to continue in a sense, whether they recognize it or not, that's the world marveled. So why is the head mentioned here in this verse 3? Why do we think the head is mentioned? Well, Sister Molly, please. And then Brother Chris.
Just thinking that's where the control of the beast is.
Okay. Very good. Brother Chris.
Yeah, I was just thinking, just to give you that identifier, so you're not confusing it with the Roman Empire. This is the Holy Roman Empire, sort of, in its stages over.
Yes, very good. So because we, Brother Nar.
Just that the Pope is the head of the beast, and Napoleon threw him in jail where he died. But Napoleon let the Catholic Church exist, and if he hadn't, if he had done what Belisarius had done, and there would be no Catholic Church today. But he let the Catholic Church exist, and so it was able to recover over a period of time. Over.
Okay, so we appreciate that. There are two views on this wounding, Brother Norm. You expressed the one that it was Napoleon in 1799. And the other view, when he studied these verses, was that it was the Reformation wound.
Yeah, I do understand that the Reformation did begin it all, and that was the beginning of the wound.
Okay. So, very good. Brother Dan, Sister Connie?
Brother Rick, I don't know if this fits or makes sense, but after this head, the papal head was wounded, it still existed, even though the fifth head of the Roman beast took power afterwards, after the Reformation wound came upon him, and then the sixth head, and then the seventh. But I don't know, like I said, if that fits. But it was still in existence, and the people wondered, because it didn't seem like it should have life again after being wounded, having that great wound. So they wondered, well, is this really God's organization, because it's like invincible, or it can't be put away or put to death. Over.
Okay, thank you. Sister Debbie.
Yeah, it's interesting, that book you mentioned, the Hitler's Pope, is kind of interesting. When you read that, this history, you're seeing that the head was wounded, but not the body. The Pope, or the head of the church, the authority was broken up. It, at the time, the 1800s, it was like there was no central authority to the Catholic Church for a while. Every different, country had its own, heads of the Catholic Church, and they would go to this cardinal, you know, or this archbishop or whatever, you know, for their instructions. And this is what Pope Pius XII, or Pacelli, was trying to do, mostly him, but for the popes that he was working for. He was the Secretariat of State. He was trying to bring the church back together under the Pope again. And he did pretty much manage to bring back the authority of the Pope over the church worldwide, but it took several years to do that, and he had to go through the Nazis, and, you know, it was Germany that was the worst, because Germany was really independent, fiercely independent from papacy, and it took him a lot to create this concordat to bring them back all under the authority of the head, the Pope. Over.
All right. So before I call on Sister Cindy, Sister Debbie, I just want to say, you have a completely different timeline of the wounding and healing of this head from what we developed when we studied these verses earlier. So your timeline is much later. The timeline that we had developed was that this head was the fourth head of the Holy Roman Empire, that started with Charlemagne and ended with Napoleon. And it was during that period of time of basically a 1,000-year counterfeit that this fourth head of the Roman Empire was wounded by the Reformation truths, the sword of Reformation truths, and it was healed. That would have been in the 1500s, and in the 1500s, after the beginning of the Reformation, that wound was healed because the papacy had a counter-reformation. And in the counter-reformation, they dramatically cleaned up their moral act, and that was coupled with the reformers falling away by adopting many of the papacy's positions of having a church and state arrangement, as Brother Russell writes about. So it's while this head was still a head, while the fourth head was still a head, it had what should have been a death wound from a sword of truth during the Reformation. It was healed by the Counter-Reformation, and it continued as that head for another several centuries. And that's what made the world to wonder. You mean the reformers couldn't kill that papacy? And that's true. It continued until Napoleon came along. Sister Cindy.
Well, thank you. That's kind of what I was thinking. Going back to Brother Norm, when he's talking about Belisarius and, you know, this later time, I was like, well, no, wait a minute. I thought that the wound was the Reformation, because the Lord says later in Revelation, I would have healed her, but she would not. And so, you know, to my mind, that's just conclusive. At least to me it is. So I was just kind of wondering, I guess I didn't understand Brother Norm's, you know, spreading it out, you know, start with the Revelation and finish with it. I mean, that's a long time to heal a wound. So, I don't know. That was where my confusion is, but I'm more in harmony with what you were saying, Brother Rick. Over.
All right. So thank you. Yes, it does get confusing when we've studied these verses, we laid the groundwork, we had understood it, but then we start taking and making comments and applying things out of the context historically. And while each has a right to their opinion on how it might apply, that's certainly true. Well, we're trying to keep a consistent thread of thought that we find right here, and there more on that in a minute. Sister Debbie?
Well, I was always under the impression, and I could be wrong, that Pastor was saying that the deadly wound was, well, I thought was Napoleon. So are you saying that Napoleon is the beginning of the destruction of Babylon? Or I always thought the deadly wound was Napoleon, and that it recovered from having two popes killed or die outside of Rome in prison. And now you have, you know, the church wasn't destroyed then, and now it made this comeback through Well, it's hard to understand, because, you know, I always thought Pastor was saying that it was in 1799. So maybe you were saying the destruction started there. I don't know. Over.
So, Sister Debbie, I want to try to help you with this. I don't want you to take this as just being critical. If you open the biblical expanded comments under Revelation 13:3, the wound to death, you'll see multiple references. It's the Reformation, as Brother Russell's thinking. You won't find one to Napoleon. There are brethren who promote that it was Napoleon. That's true. You could look in Revelation commentaries by some brethren, and some apply it to Napoleon. I don't. But Brother Russell doesn't either. So when you say, I always thought Brother Russell made it thus and so, open the expanded comments and just do a quick double check, see if maybe there's a, you know, all our memories are faulty. I'm right there with the rest of you. But it's just good to do a double check. It takes a lot of time in the study. When I look at this list on here, we've got 30 consecrated hours We have 30 consecrated hours sitting here in prayer to God. We want to be reverential. We want to be patient. We hope for clarity of truth. But we also want to realize that we have to compromise some of our own time in order for the benefit of all 30 to try to benefit as well. So that's part of what a study leader tries to do. He tries to look that I've got 30 consecrated hours sitting in front of me. How am I helping them in understanding the Word of God? Brother Norm.
Yes, apologize for not being more clear, but I wasn't trying to say that Napoleon was the deadly wound. I understand it's the Reformation. I was just referring to the end of the 1260 days, and Napoleon, it would seem, to be the culmination or the evidence of the deadly wound, that it leaded up to the Pope losing all his power. And to me, that was, you know, it came how many hundred years, 60, 17, 200, 300 years later, but it was the evidence that the Reformation dealt a deadly blow. And then, as pointed out, there was a counter-Reformation, and it allowed the beast to recover somewhat, and we're now waiting. Satan standing by the sea with a foot on the seashore and the land, and he's waiting. The flood's over, and he's trying to ascend to power once again that he had at that time. Over.
All right, thank you. The scriptural emphasis in these three verses that we're considering, the scriptural evidence is that deadly wound was healed back then. All right. Ruth.
Well, I thought the key of interpretation was the verse in 13:14, because the wound was by a sword, which is the truth of the Reformation, which was the wound. So the sword of the Spirit, which is the truth. So it could be wounded by the French Revolution or whatever, but that's not really the sword of the truth. So that's what nails it down in my mind. Over.
We need it as both a wound, as you're bringing out, and we need it also healed. So, okay, I thought we could move through that verse 3 much more quickly. Silly me. So I'm going to do it. In Revelation 13:3, we got the insights that it was a head that was wounded, and it's fitting, as brought out, that it was during the time of the fourth head out of the seven, which was during a period of the Holy Roman Empire. But it was healed. It was healed as it was still a head. So it was healed during that Holy Roman Empire period, 1800 to 1799. And the people wondered after that papal beast. They marveled that it had, it wasn't struck dead by the Reformation. In our verse 12, where we were, those that dwell on the earth, they worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. This again demonstrates the healing took place right after the wounding. It was all in the 1500s, so that the people who were living at the time when the Church of England, the two-horned beast, developed, they all marveled that by the end of the 1500s, the papacy was, the wound was healed. It was still the fourth head. It was still the Holy Roman, supposed Holy Roman Empire, and would continue so. And in our verse 14, Revelation 13:14, and deceive them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, and is the Church of England, was able to do miracles, we're going to discuss. He did it while the papacy was watching, as it were, from the continent. And it says to them, by example, it's the Church of England being able to be as do powerful things, including apostolic succession claims, that it said that the Church of England's bishops had apostolic succession because they got it from the papacy when they left. They kept their apostolic succession. So now you have a second beast system that claims apostolic succession. And by example, that goes to cause them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to that first beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. So the wound, now we learn from this verse, was from a sword, which is truth, like the friends have brought out, the Reformation truth, and yet it was healed, and it was living during the time when this Church of England was first being developed. Sister Debbie.
Well, I have to correct myself, because all this time, I've got to be grateful to the Lord that this was brought up, because I was under the impression that it was, you know, the deadly wound was in 1799, and I thought, well, you know, I'm just confused, but I was reading in volume 2, page 272, if I could, real quick. We hope to prove to the satisfaction of every conscientious reader that this great apostasy or falling away mentioned by Paul has come, and that this man of sin has been developed, has sat in the temple of God, has fulfilled all the predictions of the apostles and prophets concerning his character, work, etc., has been revealed, and now, since A.D. 1719, consumed by the spirit of the Lord's mouth, the truth, and will be utterly destroyed during this day of the Lord's wrath. This is where I was thinking the deadly wound, and that was my fault, my mistake. Here, pastor is saying that in 1799, that's when it started to be consumed or destroyed. So I want to ask your forgiveness. I'm sorry, I was wrong. Okay.
The discussion on the consuming starting in 1799 is being done in the Daniel study on Wednesday night, where we've been spending a lot of time the past few weeks talking about the consuming process at the end of the 1260 years, prophetically pointed out in Daniel 7. So, all right, thank you, Sister Cheryl.
I'm wondering, in verse 11, and he spake as a dragon, Henry VIII, the date on that, because I Googled he reigned from 1509 to 47, but it would obviously be after 1517 that this would be true. So can you pinpoint the date for me?
1531.
Thank you.
I think that's where he started the Church of England, if I'm not mistaken. The Church of Ireland came aboard a couple years later.
Thank you.
Okay. Good. Bono.
Yes, I'm very thankful for the fine tuning there. I did understand the Reformation to be the deadly blow, but I thought the wounding was recovery, the healing was a long process. And now I understand that. So the counter Reformation, I can study that more thoroughly and get a better understanding of that. So the wound, we're saying, was healed long before Napoleon was ever born.
Yep.
And I understand that now, and I'd been a little, I did understand the Reformation was the wound, and maybe, I guess I wasn't very clear on the healing process, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, good. So just if anyone likes a little more chronology, the Counter-Reformation, when we talked about it, it was from 1545 to 1563. 1545 to 1563. And when you look at that, you pick up, it's like about an 18-year period. And it was very marked. It was very marked. And undoubtedly, Satan was behind it in order to shore up his favorite Antichrist system. while he was busy trying to undermine the reformers, which he did undermine most of the reformers, and they became daughter systems to the Great Harlot, adopting the primary problem of cooperating with the fornicating with the kings of the earth. So, okay. All right. Was there anything more on this wounding aspect and the healing? Sister Debbie.
Could you say those dates one more time? It's 1545 to what? I'm sorry.
1563. You know, and we talked about back then, we're not going to open this up more. It was just going to be a reminder that the Jesuits came into existence in the 1500s. They were part of the Jesus Society, Jesuits. They were part of the papacy's counter-reformation cleansing, return to holiness. And it was one of their Jesuits, the priest, Ribera, who created the concept in the 1500s, in the counter-reformation period roughly, that there was a man of sin singular who was to come up in a literal temple of God in the distant future. Because he had to throw some dust in the air because the reformers were busy identifying the popes as the man of sins. The line of popes as the man of sin and the Antichrist. Okay. And I believe we read about that. If you like the short version, you can read about that in the back of I think it's in the booklet. Is it What's This World Coming To? Someone give me a nodded head. No, it's not that. What's it in?
Can we ID Antichrist?
Can we identify Antichrist? Of course. Thank you. All right. Very good. Okay. So with that, if we go to our Revelation 13 and verse 13, and he doeth great wonders. This is the Church of England. He doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men and deceive them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast. And so, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. So the Church of England's example of what they were able to do, and the papacy was there at the same time, obviously, and the Church of England was claiming authority and doing things and making proclamations that had previously been what the papacy was able to do. Now the Church of England is doing this. So you and I have to put ourselves in our mind back historically to that time. This was revolutionary. How could Henry VIII do this without being struck dead by lightning or this, that, or the other? How does he claim to have this authority and get away with it? Well, as brought out, he claimed, the Church of England claimed for their bishops that when they left the papacy, they retained apostolic succession. So they claimed, the Church of England bishops claimed, they had the power invested in them that God and Jesus had invested in the original 12 apostles. Whatever they would say on earth would be bound in heaven. That's this apostolic succession. And the laying on of hands, an actual ceremony, laying on of hands from one bishop with that power to a new bishop or another bishop, they are conveying by the laying on of hands that supposed apostolic succession. So that's huge. What are some other aspects of what the Church of England did that would be reminiscent of what the papacy did? Sister Cindy.
Well, actually, before you asked that, I was thinking about apostolic succession. The apostles themselves laid hands on a 12th gentleman, and the Lord rejected that in favor of Paul. And so, you know, these people they're laying hands on each other. How did they know that the next guy would be approved of God? You know, even the apostles didn't know that. So just had to bring that out. Over.
All right. Appreciate that. Thank you. There's only 12 apostles of the Lamb, we learned right in the Revelation. So that's our clue. Brother Chris.
I think your question, this may be part of the answer, was that once the Church of England was established, Catholics basically became persecuted and were leaving England in groves that wanted to stay faithful or suffer the wrath. And that's where you get into the stories of Anne Boleyn and Queen of Scots and their leanings towards one or the other. So that's like a history people can look into if they enjoy that kind of thing. And that's how you get that Bloody Mary, because she changed everything back. So anyhow, that's all very interesting. So whatever that's worth, over.
Yeah, all very true. So this fire coming down from heaven, it's these fiery judgments. Ruth.
From reprint 321, called down fiery judgments. But I was thinking, I guess this is more of a question. He was excommunicated. Henry VIII was excommunicated. Didn't he turn around and do some sort of invective against the Pope too?
I don't recall. That may be.
Okay.
But Brother Chris's point is well documented that the papists were persecuted in England and in English territories. And then there was a reversal for a period of time where the papacy came back, tried to come back into power, and the Protestants were persecuted, and then it reverted back. And it was all happening in a historical sense. It was happening rather quickly. Now, Brother Chris.
I posted in the chat last week that if people like to watch a movie on that kind of history, there's a 1966 Hollywood movie called A Man for All Seasons, and that's about Thomas More, who was the bishop for the Catholic Church, who had to confront Henry on all of his abuses, which led to him declaring himself head of the church and beginning the Church of England. So it gives you some historical background if you like movies on that stuff. Over.
Okay, very good. Yes, very good. Very good. Sister Carrie.
Could one of the marvels or could it be that the priest could now marry?
Oh, I don't know if that would have been one of those or not. Kind of interesting. We'll have to think on that one. But it's a fiery, this is fire come down from heaven. So usually fire is a picture of quite often of judgment. And in this situation, this fiery judgment that they were executing was that the head of the church is the head of England, and they were persecuting and renouncing the papists in their lands. They were claiming to have the same authority as the popes, and the papacy was still in existence. So they were doing this, the Church of England was doing this, while the papacy watched in horror to see that the English people accepted, in the main, a new church with a new church leader. And it is interesting, when you look back at the Church of England's ceremonies and their conduction, which some of us saw with the coronation last night, ourselves, we like to recap, just hit the highlights for us. But you can see how similar it is to the papacy, with the pomp and ceremony, and a high mass and various things. It's that's intentional. That's, they broke away, but they wanted to retain much of what they had previously. So it's all very fascinating. Brother Norm.
Yes, I thought Archbishop of Canterbury was the head of the English Church of England. Did King Henry take that title? Does anyone know?
Yes, he has that title. He is the head of the church. And okay, the archbishop answers to him. And if you saw on TV last night the archbishop kneeling, he was pledging his fidelity to the king.
Okay, that answers that. Thank you.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why it emphasizes in our verse 11 that he spake as a dragon. He was the civil authority who became a religious leader. The Pope was a religious leader who became a civil authority. Sister Debbie.
That must have been, I didn't watch that, so that must have been new because I don't think, that the Archbishop bowed to Queen Elizabeth when she was, during her coronation. I don't remember that, but this must be something new. Over.
I think you can go on YouTube pretty easily and find the recap and watch the highlights. It's interesting. It's history. It's just, to us, it's a history that manifests what had taken place in the past. So that's of interest to us. Okay. Ruth.
Well, the principle is that to be a beast, the head of the church is also the head of the government. So like the whole time since Henry VIII till today, that's been true.
Yes.
No matter what actually happened at the coronation, that's been true. That's what makes it a beast. Otherwise, it's just a church.
Exactly right. Okay, very good. Brother Chris.
Well, almost as foolish as the apostolic succession, you know, they've got all the pomp, as you brought out, ceremonies, formalism, traditions, and even to where the king and a lot of to do about him sitting on that Balerni stone that was established in the 1300s, that he had to be sitting on that in one of the most uncomfortable chairs ever created, I think back in like the 1800s. Over. And people look at that and it's like, they never think about how stupid that is. They just love it because it's the king and...
No, thank you. Thank you. That's so true. What Brother Chris is talking about, many of you may know and some of you might not be familiar with it. We will take a little aside here because it tickles my fancy because I want to make a scriptural connection to it. So you might have seen that they used a 3D printer to create a large stone block that was the same size as this historical stone that had first been up in Scotland, which they brought down, as Brother Chris says, to London, England. And the kings are to be anointed upon it when they take their throne, so to speak. And the throne seat is set over this rock. So they use a 3D printer to make a similar stone that they could practice putting this big wood chair, like Brother Chris mentioned, over the top of this stone. And that's where Charles sat when he was being inducted as king. But this is a wild, weird twist on 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter. It's actually verse 4, but we'll start in verse 1. 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 4. Brethren, this is a serious side point. I mean, it's a serious, very much a side point. Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and they were all baptized, and the Greek is into Moses, in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink. They all drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Now, okay. That rock that followed them was not a literal rock that they carried around. It was just demonstrating that the Lord miraculously allowed Moses to smite a rock on at least two occasions that brought forth water in their desert situation. It wasn't a rock they carried around. The manna that they ate and the quail that they ate was their food. And it wasn't something they carried around. It's spiritually provided in sense it was miraculously provided. It wasn't literal spiritual. And they were baptized. They passed through the waters of the parted Red Sea. So the water is on both sides and there's a cloud over the head, which is made up of water. So as a nation, they were baptized into Moses because they followed him. And that's the symbol of how one gets baptized into Christ. But there's a deeper lesson there, but we're going to leave it at that. However, there's long been this bizarre theory that this special rock was passed down from Israel and that their kings were anointed with it, and it made its way to England, Glastonbury, up to Scotland, and now back down to London. And so this rock is where their king gets anointed, and it gives them divine authority back to the nation of Israel with their kings. So, it's a serious aside, but they're still playing that game, as Brother Chris brought out, that big wooden chair that Charles sat on until he got to move to the more comfortable chair. That's where he sat, where they was crowned. And there you have it. So, any comment on any of that? Hopefully not. We can go back to our regular schedule. Okay, that's just an aside. Let's go back to Revelation and 13. And so in Revelation 13, our verse 14 is bringing out that it deceived them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which this two-horned beast, the Church of England, had power to do in the sight of the papacy. So it's saying the papacy is not the only church civil government in the world. We've got a second one now. And that was pretty miraculous. People were shocked. And yet it took hold. But lo and behold, it tells us in our verse 14 that it gave an idea to those who dwell on the earth to do something, to make an image. So we talked about it a little bit last week. Let's pick up with that. What does that mean? It's saying to them, saying here again, it's by example. It's suggesting to those that dwell on the earth, they should make an image. Who's they that dwell on the earth? Brother Dan.
It seems it's those who are watching and they dwell on the earth. They're part of stable society, a religious society. So it seems like it's other religious people or denominations saying, what great power both papacy and the Church of England have, and we should follow them, follow their examples to get that same kind of power. Over.
Okay, very good. So the distinction might be dwell on earth, and the earth is that the earth are those who are satisfied Church of England. The earth might be those who are satisfied papists, but those that dwell on the earth, they seem to be those who aren't satisfied with being Church of England members, aren't satisfied with being papist members. They want to create their own religious element. And when we discussed this last week, we followed Brother Russell's lead that this was a development of the Evangelical Alliance in 1846. And when we looked at that Evangelical Alliance, the different friends brought out a number of comments, I know for myself that I dated it August 19th, 1846. It was in London, England. And it was a group of 800 denominational Christians who had come together at this first meeting. They were from various denominations. And they had determined that they wanted to establish what an evangelical Christian would be. Evangelical Alliance. What is an evangelical Christian? Last week, Brother Adi read for us their statements. And Brother Adi, do you remember you highlighted about three or four that we wouldn't have been in agreement with? You remember those?
The Trinity was one. The divinity of Christ was the other one. I don't remember what the third one was after those three of them.
Okay. The bodily resurrection of Jesus.
Yeah, that's it.
And, okay, very good. Oh, and also there was this expression, when the great judgment takes place, the dead will come forth with the saved gaining eternal life and the lost suffering eternal condemnation. So, obviously, they don't understand the two salvations or what the condition of death is. All right, good. Ruth?
Was immortality of the soul, was that in there?
I'm trying to remember if that was explicitly said or is it implied because they have the judgment, the great judgment that you have all coming forth and you're either going to be lost, suffering eternal condemnation, or saved. Okay. Other comments on that angle? Brother Chris. Then Sister Molly.
Yeah, when I wrote down the 9 points from the Britannica years ago, the wording is a little bit different, so I don't know if there was like, here's the original, and then since then they've kind of modified the language to better express their confusion, because it's the same, it's just a little bit different. And number 8 was immortality of the soul, the resurrection of the body and final judgment by Jesus Christ. So it's just a little bit different wording, but it does show eternal torment, Trinity, you can still pick them out pretty easily, over.
Okay, good, appreciate that, thank you. Sister Cindy. Cindy, hold, please. Sister Molly.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't actually put my hand icon up. I have a question. I'm just unclear about how, if I'm in verse 14, how the Church of England and Ireland, being this beast out of the earth, how that entity ordered the inhabitants of the earth to set up an image of the first beast out of the sea, which we understand to be papal system. I'm confused how that led to the evangelical alliance.
So you use a word that I didn't see before. Does your translations have the word ordered?
It does. Yeah, maybe that's part of the issue for me.
So I've got in the Diaglot, I'll read 14 from the Diaglot. And to deceive those who dwell on the earth by the signs which it was given him to do in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who has the wound by the sword and did live. And that's where we use the expression by example. It didn't order them. It's telling them by example that they can try to make a religious organization and it can be successful because the two-horned beast was successful in the sight of the ten-horned beast to create its own religious organization.
Okay. I think I think my confusion maybe is who the inhabitants of the earth are. Cause I think, I wasn't connecting that now because you had said that it was members of other religions, people in other members of society that aren't necessarily within this Church of England and Ireland. Is that correct? That the inhabitants of the earth aren't a part of that church?
So those who dwell on the earth, to my mind, the suggestion is those who are the earth would be members of the Church of England, Anglicans, and happy to be so. They would be papists and happy to be papists. But when the Evangelical Alliance formed, there were members from a variety of different denominations who wanted to create something new, a new religious organization.
Okay.
Which implied they weren't really satisfied with being Church of England or the papists. But they saw by example, oh, you can create a new religious organization and be successful.
Okay, that makes sense. So Satan working through these is just, you know, influencing people. I see. Okay, to continue this cycle.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Okay. All right, good. Well, there's a couple of hands. Sorry, Sister Cindy. Thanks for your patience.
Okay, I actually had a question too, on the Evangelical Alliance. Is that still in effect today?
The Evangelical Alliance is still existence today, and you can visit their website, which I did for a discourse we had about a month ago. We had an assignment, and that was part of it, the Days of Waiting. And I visited their website and read all about it, and you could see all the different denominational members who are active with it. And, you know, we want to say that there are other groups that have come out. We've had the, Worldwide Church of Christ, the WCC. We've had, various other, groups have come about, but this one seems to fit our symbolic symbols of what we're looking for. But, okay, Brother Chris.
I was thinking that, going back to Sister Molly's question, that, you know, while all this was going on, papacy, it's got a head wound, it's recovering from it. Here comes the King of England taking advantage of that and starting his own church. So here you've got these two. You've got the beast, and then you've got the image of the beast, and then through their example is brought out, kind of suggesting, you know, that this can happen without God's wrath coming upon you. Europe basically is in turmoil as far as religion goes, because here you've got the rise of Lutheranism, which is either King of England or the papacy, and so they're gathering steam big time. And then you've got John Wesley, who's looking at all this, who's coming down the road a little bit later, and Fox, who's the Mormons, looking at all this. So all of these other various factions and all of these churches which became founded all have their own, in a sense, they don't have the apostolic succession that gives them any power, which is why they ultimately joined into an alliance. What they do have is that they're seeing this example, and they all have a central authority, which is what we don't have. You know, we're united through our faith, and Jesus is our head, but they all have central authorities. There's some main group that they have to get blessed by in order to change anything or to establish a church or whatever. Over.
Okay, very good. So true. Thank you. Oh, no.
I'm just noting her. I'm not going to read it because I haven't read it all myself, but it says they have deviated from the original Evangelical Alliance. UK, the Church of England Evangelical Alliance, changes its basis of faith or doctrinal statement. Neoliberals, watch out. And then it just goes on. It's a long thing, and I'm not going to read it. But in the category of things that slip you by, the UKEA last month announced a new basis of faith. I'm going to leave it right there. So there are changes, but as brought out, they still do hold a lot of the original things. But I think they want to kind of be connected, but have the right to deviate and have a few different ideas of their own. Over.
All right. Thank you, Brother Norm. So when I looked at this, there were currently 79 different denominations associated with the Evangelical Alliance, 79 different denominations. The UK, United Kingdom Evangelical Alliance, sounds as if they're one of the branches, one of the participant members, and they wanted to make some adjustments in their phrases. So the friends can look into that if they like. Sister Carrie.
To Molly's question about how could, I think her translation said that it was caused. Oh, no, it was ordered. So if we look at Revelations 13:15, and it says, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many who would not worship the beast. So mine says, not mine, the King James Version says cause. And you could look at cause meaning in two different ways. One is that this image of the beast causes, like, directs orders, or it could be, and cause could mean is as a consequence. So what they do has a consequence that as many as would not worship the King of the Beast. And those are two different interpretations of the word cause. And the Strong's is to, sorry about that. I'm getting it here. Is this 15? The Strong's is, oh, I'm so sorry. But you know what I'm saying. Over.
I do, but Sister Kay, I want to say you are considering the word cause in verse 15.
Yeah.
Verse 15, we believe, is still a future event.
Oh, okay.
And we believe verse 14 is a past event. So we believe verse 14 started the deceiving and the those that dwell on the earth and those miracles it had, started with the Church of England doing those miracles in the 1500s and continuing to exist without falling apart. So that by 1846, those that dwell on the earth decided, we're going to make an image of that ten-horned beast. We're going to make an image of a new religious order, because we saw the Church of England successfully did it a couple centuries ago, so we're going to try it now. But we're only an image of a beast. We're not a beast. Why are they only an image of a beast? That's the question. Sister Cheryl. You look so studious today. We haven't heard from you. Go ahead. What? Why are they only an image and not an actual beast?
Well, that's what I was looking in the scripture 15 and wondering. You know, I have it as 1846, but they're not vitalized yet.
That's
so
right.
I was questioning that at the end, you know, that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. It just seems like that wouldn't be until they're vitalized.
So see, you're jumping ahead a little bit. Stick in verse 14.
Okay. So, right, they're just an image because they've taken these false doctrines and proclaiming, but they're not, they don't have the civil authority.
Exactly.
They aren't vitalized.
Exactly. Exactly right. And so we notice, brethren, this image does not have any horns. Because it's not a civil power. Just like Sister Cheryl said. It's only an image. It's not a real beast. It doesn't have civil authority. It doesn't have any horns under its control. It's not, they were religious people, not civil power people. They weren't kings and princes that came together in 1846. They were theologians and pastors and ministers, and they came together to form a religious organization. All right, Brother Norm.
And they don't have apostolic succession. Is that correct?
That's true. That's going to, again, that's our verse 15. And I understand why we all want to go to 15. But at first, it's an image of a beast. And we're just talking about why it's an image of a beast and not an actual beast. The apostolic succession plays a role, but not on whether it's an image of a beast.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Because a beast is a church-state government. Sister Roseanne.
Brother Rick, could I put it this way, that they're mimicking, they want to mimic, or they're mimicking that which they want for themselves, that power, that prestige, from like the Catholic, like the papacy. Like mimicking would be like an image. They're not really there, but they're, oh well, that's it.
Okay, that's true. That's true. All right. Now, with that, let's take another little point. We talked about it last week. Okay, Brother Adi first.
So it's interesting because on the Evangelical Alliance Statement of Faith, they write at the bottom that the Statement of Faith is not copyrighted and it may be widely used. So it's not forcing their statement of faith, so they don't have power yet, but they're just suggesting that these are statements of faith that they want people to use. Over.
Okay, so they don't have the power to enforce it, but if you wanted to be a member, I'm sure you'd have to agree to that. And so last week we talked about how this enters into the cleansing of the sanctuary prophecy. But Ruth, your comment. Maybe you could pull it all together. We're winding down on our time now.
Well, I was thinking of them making this image. I think of Daniel, the image in Daniel of gold on the plain of Dura. They make this image. It's an idol. They idolize the power that they would like to have over other Christians by either excommunicating them or deciding whether they're Christians or not, which is exactly what they did, and that this whole process by which they're excluding, they want to exclude those that don't agree with them, is what the cleansing of the sanctuary was all about, because the true sanctuary was excluded officially from all these churches because they made these lists.
Okay. All right. Very good. So next week, Lord willing, we'll talk about Daniel 3 a little bit more. But the point that the brethren have brought out over the years is that that image that was made in the plain of Dura of gold had to be cast. So it would be cast metal by creating the outline in sand on the floor of the plain of Dura. You needed a flat place. A plane, you had earth, sand, or clay to create an image, and they would pour the metals into that. So what we're saying, what the brethren have said, is that image is in the making process. It has not yet been stood up to be worshiped, enforced worship, like the Daniel, the third chapter, elaborates on. So it's just this. It's in this process. It's been being, continues to be made, and it's awaiting the life-giving authority. So, brother, we have to end here, fascinating as it is. We'll pick up with verse 15, and I hope to send out a few, just some notes for some references on scriptures that we'll do a little side study on the mark of the beast and its image as found elsewhere in the Revelation. We did talk about this somewhat. You may remember that we had a little side study way back in Revelation 9 verse 4. And we'll send that out. We'll put it together because, brethren, we want to consider these other places it appears in Revelation, the mark. We want to make our connection that in our 14th chapter, our following chapter, we start out with the 144,000 having the seal of the living God in their foreheads, as it were. So we're going to see a connection between receiving the mark of the beast in his image versus having the seal of the living God. And it flows in the Revelation. So we'll just send out a few reference notes and we'll pick up with that.